from Relay. This is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of streaming media. This is episode number 80, recorded October the 17th, 2024. I am your master of ceremonies, Jason Snell, and with me this time, it's a return for Will Carroll, sports writer, injury expert, proprietor of Under the Knife. Will, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Hey, always great to be here. It's an honor. It's always good to talk to you because I learned so much.
It's fun.
So it is. I listen to your podcast and now I get to like participate.
And just the other week, I saw somebody commenting on social media saying, boy, that ankle or shoulder or elbow or whatever looked bad. And I hope it was just a sprain or a strain and not a tear. And I was like, let me tell you something that Will Carroll taught me. A sprain is a tear.
Every time somebody says that, it's like the reverse of an angel getting his wings. It's like a devil grows his horns, or I die a little bit inside. But if that were true, I'd be completely dead by this point. But yeah, you know, little knowledge.
Medical.
I actually did have t-shirts that said a sprain is a tear at one point.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I know. And yet you're still out there doing it. It's just, yeah, there's a lot of mystery that shouldn't exist around injuries. And that's one of the things you probably get this.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you probably get this. You know, I have to explain what I can't tell you how many times I've had to explain what a sprained ankle is over the year, but you probably have to do the same with tech. You can't just assume that somebody knows what the heck a Sherlock is or something.
There's a lot of assumptions that get made that are not based in reality or based in old school stuff that has since been changed, but people are still sort of sticking to what they learned. That's a thing that I've learned is that, you know, if you learn something or think you learn something, it's very hard to be convinced that that's not actually true.
Well, it's a good thing we're not seeing anything like that in the world.
Yeah, no kidding. I wanted to start with, we're going to do a lot of sports talk because that's the thing that I like to do with Will. And there's a lot of sports in the business of streaming. So much of it is being driven by sports right now. But I have a slightly, only partially sports related item to start with, which is a business move that was noted, I think, last week, which is that Apple is actually going to make Apple TV Plus available on Amazon Prime Video as a channel, which means it's an add-on that you can pay the same $10 a month that you'd pay Apple directly, but you can add it straight within Amazon's app and get access to all of Apple's content. And that includes not just, you know, Ted Lasso and Severance and things like that, but it also does, I believe, include, you know, Friday Baseball, and I assume you're going to have access to MLS Season Pass. I'm not 100% sure on that, but like it is a deal that lets, it's really interesting because when Apple started doing this, I think everybody felt like it was a way for Apple to try and get people to, you know, give them more money, sure, but on their, it's a bonus for owning an Apple device, having an Apple TV, but they have gradually expanded this. They've added Apple TV apps on smart TVs and other streaming boxes. And this strikes me as being just yet another way for Apple to reach more people who are not going to hand Apple money directly. I mean, that would be nice, but I sort of suspect that Apple is reaching the end of their easy access audience, and that if they really want to reach a broader audience, letting it live inside of Amazon's app, if people prefer that, is a thing that they're clearly willing to do. But it does mean that Amazon takes another step toward being a kind of everything but Netflix app.
And that'll come up later. But, you know, it's that but Netflix that's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, because obviously Amazon Prime Video has an app on Apple TV and virtually everywhere else. So this was just kind of the reverse. I was actually a little surprised it hadn't already happened because, like you said, the Apple TV Plus app service, whatever, little icon is on everything. Yeah, it was pre-installed when I got a new TV recently. So they're trying to be everywhere, and they're trying to be everything. I still think both of these have a problem in that... I'm going to date myself here, and it used to be we would get a magazine and it would come every week and it would have all the programming notes in there, and you would turn to Thursday and see what's on at 7. And, you know, we've basically had that same model, but it's just absolutely broken on streaming. Nobody has come up with the, you know, press the guide button for streaming, and right. everybody's tried to do that, but until everybody gets into it, meaning you, Netflix, it's just not going to work. And I'm still not even sure how you organize it, because the paradigm is, you know, little boxes and lines that line up for time and channels on the side. And that's how it works. It doesn't work like that for streaming. I don't have to worry about it being 7 o'clock.
Right.
It seems Netflix is trying to do that with all its live programming. So this makes sense to me. I still think, you know, Apple TV Plus, all the pluses are still awkward. Amazon Prime Video isn't, though it's a good service, it's just so awkward to say, you know, what's that show on? Amazon Prime Video.
Yeah.
It doesn't roll off the tongue like CBS.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there are branding issues with all of this stuff, and how much of it is just going to settle down and we'll get used to it, and how much of it is not. I think there is a truth that people have Prime. Lots of people have Prime, and mm-hmm. that means they get Prime Video. And mm-hmm. that is an interesting opportunity for Apple just to have access to people who, you know, may not even be thinking a lot about streaming, but since they get this service with Prime, that it is an app that they will come and visit and watch a football game or whatever. And so having it in there, I don't think this is going to, you know, change yeah. anything very much, but I think it's an interesting a little strategy point that Apple clearly is making some changes to how it approaches reaching beyond whatever scope that it has, which is a pretty broad scope when it comes to tech. But when it comes to streaming, you know, I think Apple TV Plus punches above its weight in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. but it's also not like, you know, it is not a highly rated in terms of pure viewership. It's not a highly rated yeah. service. And I'm sure that frustrates them.
I'm sure. But there has never been a show on there. There have been shows I don't like or shows that are not for me. Servant. Watched a couple episodes and I was just like, no, this yeah. is not my genre. But I just finished watching Silo. The first season, second season's coming in about a month. Uh-huh. It was phenomenal.
Love it.
It was absolutely yeah. phenomenal. So yeah. I was excited about that. But when we're looking at what Apple's trying to do, you know, I'm a little bit confused because, you know, they've become the high quality service. You know, yeah. it's what HBO used to be. It's kind of the prestige TV. Disclaimer has, you know, Kate Blanchett and Alfonso Cuarón and Kevin Kline, who I was like, has Kevin Kline ever done anything bad? I couldn't find it if it did. But you know, that's sort of the prestige Emmy winning TV, and that had been their strategy. But this move immediately made me start thinking, you know, does this mean we're not going to get a cheaper Apple TV box? Is it better for them to be on, you know, Fire TVs and Rokus and smart TV, so you don't even have to have a box, because you know, the Apple TV device has always been great. I love mine, but it's far more expensive than yeah, any of the other options.
It's true. I think that the moment that they said, yeah, we're going to put the TV app on all the on Roku and on smart devices and, you know, I mean, smart TVs and stuff, that it was very clear, like, they don't feel they need to make a cheaper Apple TV, mm-hmm. which is kind of too bad because you're right. It is. I've tried them all and it is it has so many issues, but it's by far the mm-hmm. best, the least junky. It's got a lot of advantages going for it. You mentioned Silo, for example, and, you know, throw in Slow Horses and, you know, everybody's heard of Ted Lasso. That is, I feel like, one of the other parts of the story here is that Apple can do this now, I think, and go to Prime Video channels without it being embarrassing, because they have built a library over the last few mm-hmm. years that's pretty solid and unseen. I think that that's actually one of the interesting assets of something like Apple TV Plus, is if there are a lot of people out there who haven't seen those shows, there are a lot of very good shows on that. And they're not all, yes, they don't have 100% batting average. Nobody does. HBO doesn't, right? Like, but there, I am surprised. Yeah. If you had asked me to predict the hit rate of Apple TV Plus content back when they launched the service, I don't know what number I would have given you, and I don't know what the hit rate is now, but if I did the math, I'll tell you it's way, way higher than I thought. I did not expect them to do as good a job And it is, again, it's not like computer programmers doing this. They hired a couple of guys who used to work at Sony Entertainment, and they've been the ones running the ship over there. But they've done a good job. And that means that there is a built-up catalog for people who might be curious. And if a couple of clicks in your Prime Video app is enough to do that. And we should say it's not just that, right? It's also that then you're in the Amazon marketing machine. Then Amazon mm-hmm. can say, would you like to see For mm-hmm. All Mankind? Then just buy Apple TV Plus and you'll get it right here in this app. And that Amazon's good at marketing, right? So they've got that going for them too.
Exactly. It's intriguing to me that they're going that sort of direction, especially considering, you know, you mentioned hit rate. You know, they do have some really good shows coming back. There's the rumors that Ted Lasso might come back. And mm-hmm. I think that probably is their most, you know, social consciousness. Yeah. The one that's most in the zeitgeist.
For sure.
Looking for a word there. But on the other hand, you know, you take a look around. I was watching The Franchise last night, which is on Max or HBO or HBO Max or whatever we're calling it this week. And it's great people. It is a concept that should work, but oh my God, it's terrible. And you would think, you know, this is HBO's perfect show. It's people behind Veep and, you know, making fun of Marvel. And it's, I know it's only two episodes, but Jason, it's bad.
I saw Armando Iannucci's last show and it was also bad, which is too bad because he's so good with The Thick of It and Veep, but I haven't seen
Thick of It.
Franchise, but
never gets old.
Yeah.
No, I could run my entire life with just gifs of Peter Capaldi. Capaldi,
yeah,
and it would be fine. I would get fired from everything, but hey, I do that anyway.
But it would be fun anyway. Yeah. So we'll keep an eye on what Apple is up to. But this is definitely at least a little bit of a shift. I think they just want more audience, and I don't blame them. I don't think
who doesn't.
I think that was all they were. Again, this is ecosystem, but only in the broadest sense. They can spend money, they can win awards, they can feel good about it. Mm-hmm. They're getting people to buy their bundle, and if they can get more people to watch in other places, I think they're fine with it. And it all is to their benefit. I think that's how they're viewing it. Before we continue, let me take a break and tell you about our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Tract, your perfect companion for tracking what you watch. Between all of those streaming services you have and all the ones to come, probably. Do you ever feel overwhelmed, not knowing what to watch next? I absolutely do every night. Say hello to Tract. It is a super smart app and it's got your back. Tract apps are packed with awesome features that make tracking your favorite shows and movies a breeze. You can track what you're watching in real time, whether you're chilling at home or killing time at the airport. It's like a matchmaker of shows. It will suggest new stuff you'll love based on what you've already enjoyed. And you can discover where to stream your must-watch content no matter where you are in the world. Keep your must-watch list handy and organized, perfect for all those moments where you're like, oh, I don't know, what do you want to watch? And if you've ever wondered about your habits, there's a year-in-review feature that lets you dive into your stats. It's really great. I sit at that menu in the TV app or at the Apple TV home screen and think, what do we want to watch? What am I in the mood for? I look at my wife. I'm like, what do you want to watch? What do we have? A lot of times it's like, what are we in the middle of? Is there a show we forgot? Did we ever get back to that other show? It's so much. I miss those days where I just had a TiVo with stuff on it, but we don't live in that world anymore. Tract can help, and it plays nice with all your devices, web, Android, iOS, Apple TV, you name it. It's like having a TV-savvy friend right in your pocket, always ready to make your watching experience more fun and hassle-free. So go to tract.tv/downstream, and you'll get 50% off of Tract VIP. That's tract.tv/downstream for a 50% discount on VIP. Try it out. The app is free. The VIP features are awesome. And you can get it for 50% off by going to tract.tv/downstream. 50% off for the first year. Thank you to Tract for bringing some sanity to our watch list and supporting Downstream. Okay, the Diamond Sports saga, which for people, I mean, I keep talking about it because it's a huge deal in streaming. This is the, it's Sinclair, the TV stations, and they mm-hmm. set up a company called Diamond Sports, and they bought the Fox Sportsnet regional sports networks because ABC or Disney bought Fox, and Disney had ESPN. So they were, as a part of the deal, they had to sell them off. And Sinclair, this broadcasting company with lots of local TV stations, said, we'll buy them. Flash forward a few years, decay of cable subscriptions. They're bankrupt. So that's the overview. They're bankrupt, but they've got these regional sports networks, and they've got some deals going on with the NBA and NHL teams to exit bankruptcy. And then there are their deals with Major League Baseball. And it feels very much like Major League Baseball is over it and would like this all to be over. and just wants to move on and figure out what the future is and take the hit now from losing that revenue and move on. Now, the truth is, each individual team gets to decide what they want to do. Major League Baseball can't decree that all the teams walk away from their deals and start a streaming service. And so every team has to decide now what they want to do. So they're going to, Diamond is trying to retain some of the teams, but they are dumping others. The Texas Rangers said that they're definitely not working with Diamond, but they're not willing to go in on MLB right now and are thinking about maybe starting their own regional sports network or something. There's a lot of things going on here, but I think the most interesting thing about this story now that we've reached this point, which I feel like there's going to be some resolution here, at least of this chapter in the saga pretty soon. But if you're a team, you have to consider two options, which is you cut loose from Diamond, in which case you're doing what several other teams are doing, which is you are making a deal with your local cable company for carriage for people who have cable, but it's not going to pay you the way it did. And you're going to be able to set up, MLB will set up a package that people can pay and get your games live via streaming. And so you'll get it covered there. Or you could renegotiate with Diamond. They're not going to pay you what they were going to pay you, but they might pay you something that's you see as better than just completely walking away. And I think that's where a lot of teams are now, where they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. They're not going to get the sweet money that is in the contract. They're just not. But they've got to decide, do we want to rip the Band-Aid off, or do we want to essentially let this company that's probably not going to last for very long continue to broadcast our games for a while just because the money's okay? That I don't, and there's no right answer. I think this is a difficult decision for every team, because this is what 20-25% of many teams' total revenue is coming from this source.
And I was talking to a friend who's in on the ad buying side of the business, and his question was, why does Diamond Sports want to stay in business? This obviously isn't working. It's getting worse. What do they see in this? And, you know, they're going back to the bankruptcy court. They may drop even more MLB teams. They're saying they're only going to do Atlanta, which struck me as like, you're going to do the one Liberty team. That seems a little pointed.
Yeah, it is a little bit weird. Yeah, apparently, according to Sportico, there are a few teams, the Tigers, Royals, Angels, Marlins, Cardinals, and Rays, are talking about a single season renewal, which would really be like, we want a year to figure this out before we walk away. But exactly. But you're right. I don't think it's, I don't know. I guess unless the dynamic, financial dynamic has changed in bankruptcy court to the point where they really feel, which is the point of bankruptcy court, feel that they can emerge from this and have at least a somewhat viable business with their renegotiated deals. But I mean, what is there was a talk at one point of an Amazon investment that Amazon was kind of,
because Amazon into, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is so now Gotham.
And they talked about investing in Diamond, and I think that has changed now, but what's the other factor here that I was going to mention next, but I'll throw it into the pot here, is Amazon is kind of looking. And then there's ESPN, which is going to be launching Flagship next year, which is their direct-to-consumer version of everything that's on ESPN cable. And the guy who runs ESPN, Jimmy Pitaro, has said that he thinks that they have a play with Flagship for local sports rights as well. So some of what's going on here is like positioning by big players about what comes next. And then some of it is really these teams just saying, how, you know, we this is a huge amount of our payroll. We need to, we're going into free agent season as a baseball team. Mm-hmm. You know, Cleveland's still playing as we record this, but they don't know what their revenue stream is going to be. So, yeah, it's not great. It's not great.
It's not. Last year, talking to people from the Guardians, they had found out a couple weeks before the winter meetings, where you're really making all your plans, talking to the agents, talking about free agents, they had lost, I think it was 60-something million dollars off their budget.
Yeah.
And, you know, they ended up losing their ace, Shane Bieber, to injury. But here they are playing the Yankees as we speak. Certainly a payroll difference. But, you know, a team like Cleveland can win. A team like Los Angeles or New York, either of them, they've got payrolls that can go all day. Mm-hmm. You don't normally get these quote-unquote small market teams. You know, it happens in the NFL. We can have teams like Green Bay because they all share the revenue and it's all virtually national.
Right.
That's not the case with baseball. And until they get that kind of national package, you're going to be reliant on market size, which is why, yeah, a lot of people are arguing that Vegas shouldn't do it. And of course, Vegas puts out new renderings today that have a big Bally's sign right in front. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
It's amazing.
Why would you? Well, it's John Fisher. But yeah, you're exactly right. There's so much overlapping thing. We know Flagship is coming. Do they want to launch with it? Or do they want to say, hey, we're going to be bidders for those baseball rights? What is Flagship going to have? They need to name this thing soon, or everybody's going to get used to calling it Flagship.
Yeah, I know. It's really so much about the future of what baseball especially is going to do. I think that's a good question, because as I said, maybe last time or the time before, the Dodgers have a deal that lasts until like 2038 or something that pays them a huge amount of money. So unless mm-hmm. their cable partner goes bankrupt, which is probably not going to happen, they're not going to be a part of this. And you know, a lot of the big market teams are doing okay because they have particular deals and they're in huge markets with huge audiences. So part of this is going to be a complete, I think, rethink of economics in baseball and to a certain degree in basketball and hockey too, because they're mm-hmm. all so, to a certain degree, local media rights driven, but baseball is the most. So
by far, but maybe hockey, but you know, the other thing is having your own isn't always the best thing. You know, the fact that Chicago, the Blackhawks have their own. They set up a sports network, another one, with, I think, the White Sox. We're now talking about moving. That's awesome. It's one of those situations where they're barely seen. They're telling people to go out and buy bunny ears so you can get it over the air because they're not on Comcast.
Right.
And to bring this is such a snake eating its tail thing. You know, we were talking about Diamond keeping the Braves. Well, you know, that Sportsnet LA deal is with Spectrum and I think Time Warner Cable. I don't even know if Time Warner owns that anymore or whether it all went Spectrum. But John Malone is talking about buying that out of whatever holding company he put it in years ago. So this is such a mess of chasing money that I hope Flagship works. I hope that becomes, we talked about how Prime was trying to be the everything box, or maybe with the Apple TV Plus app and the, you know, Up Next thing, that was trying to be the TV guide of streaming. Maybe that's what Flagship is just going to be. You know, the CEO was talking about how he didn't really care if they had it. You know, they would point you to a game on CBS if that's what you wanted to watch, because they're not going to get the rights to something else, to the Big Ten. That's, Fox has those forever and are paying through the nose. But if you have an app, a TV box that tells me where all the sports is, okay, I'm at least listening.
Yeah, I think so. Well, so I do want to talk a little bit more about ESPN, but I just, to wrap up baseball, I'll just throw out there this thought, which is, a change is coming because the economics aren't going to be the same no matter what happens because of the fade away of those cable RSN dollars. That's just not going to be there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so the two pronged, you know, thing to look for is, one, how does baseball handle, and to a lesser extent, those other sports, the loss in revenue, because there will be a loss in revenue and it's going to more impact small markets than large markets. And what does that do in terms of parity in the sport, in terms of the relationships between the owners and the players? There's a lot of fallout that's going to happen there that is beyond just what channel can we watch our favorite team on.
Yeah.
That could go right down to serious labor unrest. And then second, serious ownership unrest, because unlike the NFL, which has socialism, these other leagues don't so much. Baseball's got a little bit of revenue sharing, but I wonder what will happen there, because as a part of the plan of like, well, could we do MLB TV and we can put a bunch of rights in it and all of that? Like, is part of the solution ultimately going to be a broader kind of revenue sharing? Because, you know, the Yankees aren't going to like that, but the Royals would love it. So what happens on that side? Because this is, I mean, because this is going to put the screws to everybody, because this is a major economic shift in sports.
Yep.
And something will happen, because it can't go on the way it's gone. It's going to change. So that's going to be really interesting to watch.
It. Yeah. Yeah. You're dead on, Jason. And we're seeing it, and it's starting to happen already. I talked to some people with the Chicago White Sox. I talked to some people with the Texas Rangers, especially when you pointed out the Rangers are going to try to go it alone. There's some interesting things happening on all the Texas fronts. Jerry Jones is getting up there in age. Stephen Jones, his son, doesn't really want to run the business side. Bob Davis, the owner of the Texas Rangers, is getting up there. They announced a joint venture to run an IndyCar race between the two stadiums. I don't know if you've seen any of those renderings. They're fairly entertaining because they completely don't acknowledge the fact that there's a river that runs in between the two.
Hmm.
I mean, it's a small river, but no elevation changes. It'll be very intriguing. But with both of these, the interesting thing is that it's all going to come down to ownership. And without going to inside baseball, there are currently two franchises for sale. One is Minnesota, the Twins in Minneapolis, St. Paul. They're for sale, and they've owned that franchise forever. It's a family. This is the second generation to own it. The White Sox are for sale. They're less for sale because Jerry Reinsdorf is kind of like George Steinbrenner in that everybody knows who he is. The White Sox were, of course, terrible. But he only owns about 20% of it. But he also owns the Bulls. So they've always said that the family was going to sell the White Sox to pay off whatever estate taxes and keep the Bulls, because the NBA is a money machine. It'll be interesting to see what that is. They've been trying to sell part of that franchise the way they have in Cleveland. Now, Cleveland is mostly owned by, I forget which Dolan, the Cablevision people.
Right.
But it's almost 50% owned now by Josh Blitzer, who owns the New Jersey Devils, the Philadelphia 76ers, something else. His partner owns the Washington Commanders. He'll take over the Guardians in 2026. He'll get the majority ownership and buy the rest out over, I think there's like five tranches of it. But all of these sales and possibilities, and let's toss in the fact that Tampa isn't going to be able to play in their own stadium,
If
not having to move altogether, and Texas is going to play into that because, oh, by the way, we've got a stadium sitting there, extra stadium. That's something everybody needs. Everybody's waiting on the Boston Celtics, and the Boston Celtics have been for sale. Everybody thinks one of the minority owners is going to buy it, but everybody thinks it's going to be for $10 billion. And nobody inside the industry thinks it's going to be anything close to that. But all the baseball owners are seeing these numbers. Artie Moreno, the owner of the Angels, tried to sell a couple of years ago, but he wanted $4 billion like they paid for the Mets. Well, the Angels aren't the Mets. It's not even really Los Angeles. So until the Celtics sell, and we have that kind of top end number, none of these other deals are going to get done. And that means these TV deals get pushed down the road.
Yeah, but it's all gonna happen. And the economics are changing rapidly too, which leads into the whole idea that you don't want to make a decision based on assumptions about economics that aren't actually true, mm-hmm. which can make it very hard for people to agree on what a fair sale is. And you don't know what the deal is, right? Like the value of an NFL team would be different if in a small market, especially if they didn't do a fully right. nationalized TV program that is, you know, everybody gets the same share of it. It would be totally different valuation. So where does that lead? Oh boy, sports has really benefited from all the money that has gone into cable over the last 30, 40 years, but now there's a reckoning and it's not going to vanish, but it's going to be different.
One other thing on this, everybody I talk to doesn't think the money's going to be less. They all just think the money's going to come from somewhere different.
It's just different. In the long run, right? I mean, there's going to be short-term shortfalls, but I think you're right that in the long term, it's just going to be different. And some people may get less and some get more. But I think you're right that it's a very...
I'm not sure.
You don't think, you think everybody's going to get theirs?
No. I just think everybody assumes that it's just this shifting landscape. You know, when it went from radio to TV, it stayed about the same. Radio obviously pays less, but I don't think it's the same. You know, nobody's figured out how to make streaming super profitable. So I don't think they're, even with, you know, rights being the one live thing left on TV that's valuable, I think it's going to be less. And I think we're going to see more direct relationships. One of the things I remember talking to a Royals official, one of their front office guys who ran the business side, was like, we have to stop thinking about ourselves as Kansas City and we have to start being Royals. You know, Kansas City Chiefs do this. Again, the NFL has a different economic model, but you know, there are a lot of people that want to watch Patrick Mahomes do crazy things, or, you know, teenage girls that know who Travis Kelce is. Why couldn't you do that with Bobby Witt Jr., the Royals star shortstop? Why couldn't you make Royals fans? There are people that move out of Kansas City all the time. There are people that grew up there and went to LA or New York that want to still watch their Royals. This is the same for every team. You know, the fact that you have a local deal, you know, if I wanted to watch, I don't know, the Texas Rangers here in Indianapolis, I can do that.
Right.
I can't watch the Cincinnati Reds because of the blackouts. So it gets crazy. And I think kind of reconceptualizing what your fandom is and figuring out how you can grow the amount of people that will pay you is going to be really, really necessary.
Yeah. And again, some may do it better than others, but I think you're right. It's going to be different. That's all. That's okay. It always is. Things are different now than they were. You know, there didn't used to be cable TV with fees that got paid out to regional sports networks. That was a huge tap of money for sports franchises. That happened, and now we are going to see something else. All right. Well, we should wrap it up. This is the end of the show. If you're not a Downstream Plus subscriber, you missed so much talk about ESPN flagship, Paramount's relationship with the NFL, the future of sports rights, why I love the Manning cast, alternate broadcasts, all sorts of other stuff. To support us, we would love you to join. Every other episode, most of the show is just available for supporters. Go to downstream.plus. We appreciate it. You get full versions of every episode, access to the Relay Discord, bonus shows from Relay, a whole lot more. You can find me at sixcolors.com. I appear on many other podcasts at Relay and at theincomparable.com. And Will, where can people find you?
They can find me at undertheknife.substack.com, and I run a mental health testing company called Ntangible.
Yes, Ntangible, with no I at the beginning.
No I.
People should check that out. It's really interesting stuff. All right, we will be back in 2 weeks. But until then, thank you for listening. Goodbye.